This is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
And I'm Anthony Brooks. As the former U.S. attorney in Massachusetts, Michael Sullivan, prosecuted attempted shoe bomber Richard Reed. Then he spent 3 years at the helm of the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms, the tip of the spear when it comes to government regulation of guns.
Now he's running for John Kerry's former seat in the U.S. Senate. Sullivan is in the thick of the race with GOP candidates Gabriel Gomez, Dan Winslow, and Democrats Ed Markey and Stephen Lynch.
It's been an impressive climb for a guy who got his start working as a stock clerk for the Gillette Company to put himself through school. He went from BC High School to Boston College and Suffolk University Law School. He joins us now from his home in Abington. And Michael Sullivan, Republican candidate for the U.S. Senate, welcome to Radio Boston. Great to have you.
Thank you very much, Anthony. It's great to be on.
So let's jump right into some of the issues. Gay marriage goes before the Supreme Court next week. As you know, 15 states will urge the High Court to strike down the Defense of Marriage Act, which defines marriage as a union between a man and a woman and prevents the federal government from recognizing gay marriage. What's your view on this case? Should DOMA be struck down?
I've actually taken the position that it should, and I believe it should because I'm more of a federalist at heart. I believe that the definition of marriage is best left to the states, not to the federal government. Massachusetts, as we know, certainly 10 years ago, recognized same-sex couples' ability to marry. You know, based on that, even though I'm a traditionalist in terms of my own personal view, the personal view being that marriage is between one man and one woman, I think that since Massachusetts has recognized same-sex couples as married couples, that all couples married in Massachusetts should be afforded the same benefits.
All right. Well, let's move on. You've just received an endorsement from Massachusetts Citizens for Life, which praised your opposition to the expansion of abortion rights. Both of your GOP opponents, Gabriel Gomez and Dan Winslow, support abortion rights. Can a pro-life candidate win in Massachusetts?
Oh, I think absolutely. I don't think people discriminate against folks because they may have long-held beliefs on this particular topic. Now, I've been pro-life for as far back as I can recall. I suspect until I really get involved in public service, nobody really cared about what my personal opinion is. But I certainly respect that there are, two lives involved when a woman becomes pregnant. Mm. Certainly like most people, I think we should do everything we can, to prevent unwanted pregnancies from happening in the first instance. And when a pregnancy does happen and a woman essentially is challenged in terms of what decisions she should be making, I think as a government, we should make sure we provide all the, support and services that she needs to make the best possible decision. And then beyond that, I think we should find opportunities to streamline the adoption process in our country to make it easier for people who are interested and able to adopt. So,
well, Michael Sullivan, can you clarify a little bit what you've said about whether or not you would support a Supreme Court justice who would repeal Roe versus Wade?
I'm not sure I was asked that question. I take this position, and I think it's an important role that the United States Senate plays. Mm. Is to confirm nominees to the United States Supreme Court. My position is quite simply, it's irrelevant what the personal opinion is.
So no litmus test on Roe v. Wade?
Absolutely not. There shouldn't be any. And I think any justice serving who has an interest in serving the United States Supreme Court would feel exactly the same way. Their personal opinion on any particular matter should be irrelevant. What should be important, obviously, is the qualifications, the experiences, the judgment in their respect for their role as a judge, just one branch of the three branches of government.
Mm. But would you support a repeal of Roe v. Wade, or is it settled law at this point?
Well, I can't say it's settled law. Obviously, that's not a role that the United States Supreme Court takes. I mean, the determination with regards to the law in terms of its interpretation is left to the justices. Certainly Roe v. Wade is 40 years old, and it's up to the justices to continue to make those determinations.
Yeah. Listen, this leads to kind of the big theme about your candidacy. The formula for Republicans who have run statewide successfully in Massachusetts has been conservative on fiscal issues, but perhaps more moderate on social issues. I'm thinking of people like, Scott Brown, former Governor Bill Weld. It doesn't sound as though you're cut from that mold. Is that fair? And if so, can you win anyway?
Well, I don't know in terms of what mold I would necessarily fall in. Certainly we've had candidates that have run and won who have taken maybe similar positions on some of these issues. We've had candidates that have run and lost who have taken different positions on these issues. My experience in terms of serving and also running for public office has been people want to have a level of confidence that you've been tested in terms of the experience you bring to the position, and beyond that, you can be trusted. And it's not necessarily trust on a particular issue, it's trust more globally. Hmm. And I've certainly supported people that on some of these issues, I would have a difference of opinion because I have confidence that they would be extraordinary leaders, you know, to represent me in various levels of government at the federal, the state, and at the local level. And I think most voters essentially approach, you know, their decisions around supporting a candidate very similarly.
Let me ask you about gun control, which, of course, is at the center of a big debate pretty much across all 50 states these days, here in Massachusetts as well. What's the best way to control firearm deaths in this country and the millions of firearms across the country? Do you back, for instance, universal background checks? Should we be doing more?
Well, certainly in terms of the at the retail level, the background checks are tremendously helpful for the purposes of identifying at least some segment of prohibited persons, that segment being convicted felons. Firearm dealers, I think, have done an extraordinary job in terms of preventing firearms being sold, you know, to convicted felons. The challenge that we have is the challenge concerning mentally ill, adjudicated mentally ill people from getting access to firearms. I happened to be at ATF, sadly, when the Virginia Tech killing occurred. And the killer in the Virginia Tech mass murder was adjudicated mentally ill, was legally prohibited from acquiring firearms. But, you know, sadly, that information was not readily available. I think one of the things we need to do is to make sure that information that is available that would help identify prohibited persons is available to the firearm dealers. That,
so your focus would be more on the individual as opposed to the weapons itself. For example, let me move on and ask you about the proposed assault weapons ban. Would you favor the assault weapons ban?
I'm in favor of identifying ways to prevent prohibited persons from getting access to firearms. And I'm also in favor of prosecuting people that use firearms illegally. Hmm. Bans are ineffective. Studies both here in the United States and abroad have determined that. Even President Obama's Department of Justice has reported that bans were ineffective. So instead of wasting a lot of time and energy, you know, misleading the public that some type of policy might have a positive effect with regards to gun violence, I'd much rather use the resources and the capital to identify the areas that would have the greatest impact. And the greatest impact is going to be, I think, two areas. One is looking at straw purchasing. This is where somebody goes in knowing that they're going to quickly turn around the firearm to a prohibited person, ratcheting up the penalties for straw purchasing, educating the consumer of the consequences of being a straw purchaser, and then addressing the issue with regards to mental health, particularly those that are adjudicated mentally ill.
Well, let me ask you a question that I think goes right to your experience as head of the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms. And if you talk, as you know, if you talk to local law enforcement agencies trying to control the movement of illegal guns, they'll tell you that they are stymied by federal rules that prohibit ATF from sharing gun trace data with local officials, the so-called TIAA amendment, right?
Yeah.
It's been strongly supported by the NRA. As a U.S. senator, would you make an effort to reverse that and allow local law enforcement officials to get hold of that gun trace data that would impede, they say, the movement of illegal guns?
Well, you see, your premise is actually not factually accurate. I was at ATF, and I actually shared all that information with local law enforcement. There's nothing that prevents ATF from sharing law enforcement information with law enforcement agencies. We did it regularly, in fact.
But doesn't the TR amendment limit it?
Only limits in terms of public disclosure, in terms of the information, because it's considered law enforcement sensitive. I was not precluded or prevented. In fact, we produced and published regular reports that we would provide to communities, either regularly or on an ad hoc request. We provided that tracing information. Every firearm that was recovered and traced is what would be considered a crime gun in Boston, Massachusetts. I was able to provide that information to the Boston Police Department. I did that nationally. Now, it wasn't done prior to me getting there.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't done because somebody believed it couldn't get done. I looked at it, and it was apparent to me that I could provide this information, and we made it readily available to law enforcement. In fact, we even published broader information, state-by-state analysis, that didn't identify the quote-unquote dealers, but identified, you know, where guns that were traced in Massachusetts, where they were being sourced from. So, you know, I
well,
think
why do so many gun control advocates have a problem with the TR amendment, though? I'm confused about that, because I've heard it described again and again, including from law enforcement folks, that it actually impedes their ability to get hold of this information.
It absolutely does not impede law enforcement, and I think they're confused by it because they're confused by it. They don't understand and appreciate the ability for ATF to provide that information, and we provided it regularly. There are reports that cities like the city of Boston was able to get on a regular basis from ATF when I was there as the director.
Mm. Let me ask you, sticking with the question about around ATF, there's been talk of the FBI absorbing the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms, assuming their functions, reducing redundancy. I'm wondering what you think about that, especially given that the Republican Party's, you know, has been quite hostile to the ATF. You couldn't even get a confirmation vote. Why not bring it all under one roof?
Well, first, I never believed that the Republican Party was hostile towards ATF. And in fact, I thought the both Democrats and Republicans in both houses of Congress were very supportive of ATF. I mean, it was an issue that came up as related to one firearm dealer and one United States senator that put a block on my nomination, and we can talk about that if there's any interest in doing it. The idea about merging, I think, should not be the first option as we're thinking about federal law enforcement agencies. ATF has a very specific mission as relates to both on the enforcement side as well as on the regulatory side in terms of violent crime. You know, both national and international violent crime. They have a very important mission as relates to the work they do in the explosive arena that's helpful both domestically and internationally as well. So, you know, ATF, I think, is probably an agency that's very quietly does its job day in and day out with little fanfare. So, you know, I think that their mission is so discreet, it would probably not make sense to have them merge.
Mm.
And the FBI's, obviously, mission is much more focused today on national security interest. So it would it may affect the ability in terms of staying focused on their principal mission.
Michael Sullivan, we're just about out of time in this segment. I'm going to ask you one more question and ask you to sort of keep your answer to around 20 or 30
sure.
seconds if I could. But, you know, let's assume you win the Republican nomination. You know, it's not a stretch to say that Republicans have to run against a pretty strong headwind in Massachusetts. What's the best case you make against a, you know, very well-funded Democratic candidate, whether it's Ed Markey or Steve Lynch?
I think position on the issues. I think my focus on, you know, trying to get the problems solved in the United States Congress, you know, versus, you know, somebody maybe like an Ed Markey that's been there for as long as he has and his inability to solve these issues.
Well, Michael Sullivan, GOP candidate for the U.S. Senate, thanks so much for talking to us today. Let's stay in touch. We'd love to have you back on the show.
Great.
As the campaign goes on.
Thanks, Anthony.
All right. Many thanks
to you. Bye-bye.
Coming up in just a moment, residents break the law to save their homes on storm-battered Plum Island. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
And I'm Anthony Brooks. This is Radio Boston.